Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Under the Hoodies. I'm Bill Kegel. I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Brian Chipley. Brian, how are you this fine Thursday?
Oh, Bill, I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself, sir?
Oh, good, actually. Just had some turkey tacos, and my nose is a little runny, so if you hear me sniffing throughout the show, I promise I don't have a rolled up 20 in the bathroom. I'm just, my nose is just running from the spicy food my wife cooked up.
Well, if you did have a rolled up bill, I would hope you'd at least wait till you get on the stall, unlike the franchise in Cleveland out there.
So, while we're on the topic of the NFL, we're going to do a NFC South preview. This is going to be the first in a preview of all eight divisions in the NFL. And, Brian, I just want to get it kicked off right now. The first team we're going to talk about is the team that's going to be featured on Hard Knocks, which is the Atlanta Falcons. Now, the Falcons had a very underwhelming year after reaching the NFC Championship the year before. What do you see from them this year? What are you expecting? You know, what do you like? All that.
I see a rebound year. I'm not sure if it's a rebound year that's good enough to get them in the playoffs, but I can see them at least going 8-8 or 9-7, which would be, you know, a 4 or 5 win improvement for them, which is certainly sizable, not where they were 2 years ago. But, you know, to be completely honest, and I'm going to get to a question to you in a minute here, but, you know, I just don't think the roster is really that great. I mean, I can't think of the last impact player that they've had on defense. And as somebody that I consider myself vice president of the Steven Jackson fan club, I just wish that him and Matt Ryan could have played together for a little, you know, Steven Jackson circa 2006, 7, 8, 9. But, you know, he's a little bit up there in age now, so they don't really have much of a run game. But what they do have is probably the, you know, one of the best wide receiver duos in the league, and Roddy White and Julio Jones, and, of course, Matt Ryan. Which leads me to this question. What do you think of Matt Ryan? Where would you put him on the echelon of quarterbacks in the NFL today?
I do think he's a tier 2.5 guy. I don't want to say he's tier 2, but I also don't want to say he's tier 3. I think that he has the ability to be a tier 1 guy, but I think, I don't know if he's the kind of guy that needs the help, or is he making his receivers better? You know what I mean? I don't know if he's that guy. Like, I don't know if he's Tom Brady. He's a very, very good quarterback. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes, but he also isn't going to give you, you know, I just don't know if he's a guy that can lead a subpar team to, you know, consistent AFC championships like Tom Brady, or improve his receivers like Peyton Manning. I don't know if he's that guy. I sort of have him in the, I don't even know kind of the guy to classify him with. I would say my best comparison to him would be he's about 80% of what Tom Brady is currently. I mean, this is kind of like aging Tom Brady, but I don't know if he's, I don't know what his ceiling is, you know? I don't know where his ceiling stops, I guess. I mean, is his ceiling 90% of Tom Brady? Or is he kind of where he's at now, and he's going to need Julio Jones and Roddy White to kind of inflate his stats a little bit? Because if last year's any indication what he could do with kind of, you know, a depleted roster, man, he might not even be a tier 3 quarterback.
Yeah, he's, to sort of make an analogy, for sports, I think that baseball and football, there's a real similarity as far as, who wins the games and how the game is won. And by that I mean, in baseball, I think that it really comes down to who controls the strike zone. You know, if the pitcher's able to get hitters to swing at pitcher's pitches and get them to swing at, you know, fastballs a few inches off the plate, get ahead in the count 0-1, 0-2, et cetera, you know, they're more likely to have a more favorable outcome than the hitter, and therefore they control the at-bat, they control the strike zone. You know, similarly, a hitter that doesn't swing at those bad pitches, it's able to work deep counts, they get from a 3-1, 3-0 count. You know, now they control the strike zone, they control the at-bat, and they're more likely to have a favorable outcome. And in football, I feel like that's kind of how it is with, in 2014 at least, with who can control the line of scrimmage. And I don't mean this in the way that we used to mean it 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, where it was, whose fat boys can push the other fat boys around farther. I mean, it is whose quarterback can get their teams out of a bad play and into at least a decent play. Who can figure out what blitz is coming at them, get in the right protection, you know, audible. Who can do it at the line of scrimmage? And I think after your Brady, your Manning, your Breeze, maybe even your Rodgers, I don't think there's anybody better at the mental aspect of the game and controlling the line of scrimmage than Matt Ryan. So in that aspect, I mean, I think the guy's, you know, just terrific. But I just don't know if he has any other distinguishing trait, I guess, is what I guess I try to convey. Like, you know, he has a pretty good, it's an adequate arm, but I want to call it a great arm. He's obviously not very mobile, but I still think he's certainly more than good enough to cover up what I think is a severely flawed team. And even 2 years ago when they started off, you know, so high, were undefeated for a while, they were rolling, and they had home field advantage throughout, and they're only one play away from the Super Bowl. I really think if you look close, Matt Ryan covered up a lot of flaws on that team, which to me is really indicative of a great quarterback. I think the best quarterbacks can cover up so many flaws where the lesser ones obviously can. And I feel like Matt Ryan covered up a team that, you know, their best defensive player was, at least back then, John Abraham, a pass rushing specialist. You know, they didn't really have any studs on defense. Obviously, Julio Jones and Roddy White are Pro Bowl-level talent, but their offensive line has been bad for as long as I can remember. You know, Sam Baker's a below-average left tackle. Tyson Claypool got old quickly, and they've never really had a running game since he's been there, but yet he was able to lead them to that success. But last year, I just feel like the wheels fell off, whether it was just, you know, they lost a few close games early, Julio Jones went down, and eventually, no matter how great you are, it's hard to polish up a turd that well when you're not, you know, a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. And you know, lastly, the guy, he seems like a great guy. He seems like a leader of mine. He seems like the type of guy that you love to go have a beer with. But if I got to be completely honest, I'm just not overwhelmed by Mike Smith's coaching ability either. I think that, you know, he's at best an average coach. I mean, the year that they got him, he was a defensive coordinator in Jacksonville and Jack Del Rio, and he was stripped of play calling duties. Like, I remember just being shocked at hearing that was the hire. And I don't think he's really an X's and O's juggernaut, which, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to be successful in the NFL. But, again, I just think that team is just so dependent on Matt Ryan. And I think until they balance out the roster a little bit better, give them a little bit more help in different areas, maybe put them in a better system, I think they're going to be kind of near to mediocrity for the next few years as, you know, the record I predicted, 7-9 to 8-8. I would just love to see what a Matt Ryan could do in the Patriots system or the Packers system with Mike McCarthy or some other offensive juggernaut. Like,
or even like Chip Kelly, man. He would be
or
fantastic
like a Chip Kelly.
In a Chip Kelly offense.
He really would because he's so smart. He gets everybody up there quick. You know, he really seems to have great leadership abilities. And like I said, he can control the line of scrimmage. But, you know, sometimes you can get in the right play, but if you don't have the horses to execute it, it doesn't matter what play you call. So.
Right.
But I think I'd agree with you that he's just that notch below the, you know, the best of the best, because I just think he's lacking a few of the physical traits that would put him up there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And actually, you know what? It's kind of hard to believe, but he's actually in his seventh season. He's going into his seventh season. That's kind of nuts. I feel like he just came to the league.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was looking at 30 here. He just turned 29 back in May. I had no idea. I've known he was drafted, and I know he's been in the league, but, man, I'm just kind of now I'm sort of dumbfounded that it's been, you know, 2008's been seven seasons ago. We're starting a seven season since then. That's kind of nuts. He should be at his prime. And unfortunately
right.
for him, he's just surrounded by subpar talent.
And we don't, you know, what we don't hear about anymore is we don't hear any of those people that wanted them to take Clint Dorsey that year because he was a local kid and was a monster at LSU. And
yeah.
You know, some Falcons fans were heated when they took the Boston College quarterback instead, but I'd say that was probably one of the best five decisions the Atlanta Falcons have ever made.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and what I mean by surrounded by subpar talent, I do not mean their wide receivers. They're fantastic. I more mean a running game and just an overall team. And you were right. You hit the nail on the head with the Falcons. I can't remember their last impact defensive player. I mean, let's think about that for a second. Who is it?
Off the top of my head, I'd have to say, man, I mean, even going back to the late 90s when they made that Super Bowl run, they really didn't have anybody that great on the team. I mean, Cornelius Bennett was at the end of his career. I mean, Jesse Tuggle was a good player. Keith Brookin was a good player. I want to call
Keith
him great or elite.
Man, yeah, Keith Brookin might, and Jesse Tuggle might be another one. But, man, yeah, I don't know if they've ever had, like, kind of like that guy. Like, they had John Abraham, but, like, kind of later in his career. He wasn't nearly what what he was on the Jets.
Right, and he's useless on rundowns. Like, he's even outstanding at what his one trick is, which is getting after the passer. But, you know, I don't think exactly – I want to call him a difference-making talent. I think it might be Deion, to be completely honest.
I was just about to say that. Deion might have been their last impact defensive player. Man, wow. That right there explains why they've never won a Super Bowl. Because, you know, we can say everything we want. This is very cliche, and I'm just going to say it anyway, because I think it definitely speaks to the Falcons as the overall franchise. And one thing, before I forget, I do want to get to you. I didn't text you this or say anything about you to this or say anything to you about this before the show, but I definitely want you to comment on the Broncos owner. I would assume that you have you know, feelings and thoughts on that, so I definitely want to talk about that towards the end of the show, kind of close on that note. But anyway, yeah, a franchise, man, that hasn't really ever had a stacked defense or a defense that, you know, that could impact player like that. Like I said, that's why they haven't won the Super Bowl. And the point I was going to make before I cut myself off, which is that I mean, with all the points being scored in the NFL, it's always the defense that wins championships. Like, look at last year. Like, the Broncos, I know this might be a sore subject for you, but the Broncos scored, you know, I think the most points in NFL history last year, and they actually had a faster offense. Like, they ran more plays than the Eagles did last year, and they got not just beat, they got hammered by just one of the best defenses we've seen since, you know, 2000. And, I mean, defense still wins championships, and like I said, that explains why the Falcons haven't won one, because the only impact player they've ever had on defense is Deion Sanders, and they had him. You know, he was coming into his prime, I think, before when he left for Dallas, or maybe at his peak of his powers when he went to San Francisco, in Dallas, and then Dallas. So, yeah, they've just never had that guy, and that kind of, like I said, speaks to, I guess, why they've never won a Super Bowl.
Right, and I think they understand that, too, because, you know, the last few drafts, if you look at what they've done early, Thomas Dimitroff has attacked the holes of the defense. You know, two years ago, they went back-to-back as far as corners were concerned and took Desmond Trufant, who I thought had a really nice rookie season, and I don't think he's ever going to be that elite, shutdown, leave-him-on-an-island guy, but I think he'll be, you know, a legitimate number one corner, meaning I think he'll be one of the best, you know, 20 corners in the NFL. I think he has that type of ability. You know, Marcus's little brother and his other brother also play for the Jets, so he comes from a good lineage. You know, understand what it's going to mean to be a pro, what it means to work out during the offseason, how to study film, et cetera. So I think he's going to be really good. They also took Alford, a small school corner, in the second round that same year. You know, a lot of times you take these small school corners, you know, you're not really betting on production that following year. It's going to be a speed bump going from playing against future accountants and doctors and lawyers and insurance salesmen to playing against, you know, going against Julio Jones in practice every day. So as far as Robert Alford is concerned, you know, I think he's going to be a real nice player down the line as well. And then this year, obviously, they had a top six pick, which was kind of shocking, but they were able to get a real solid blue-chip prospect in Jake Matthews, who, you know, obviously we said that left tackle has been another gaping hole for him through the years. And, you know, he's the type of guy that, on the opposite end of the spectrum of a guy like Alford, where he's going to be able to come in and play day one, you know, pencil him in at the tackle spot and just don't even worry about it until he gets hurt someday. And then the second round, they took a guy who, in my opinion, was one of the 15 to 20 best talents in the draft. So that doesn't mean he was one of the 15 to 20 most intriguing prospects. I'm just talking strictly talent, and that's Rashid Hagerman from the University of Minnesota. 6'6", 320-pound defensive tackle. Like a lot of big men, most that size, the biggest question is work ethic, his ability to maintain stamina through the game, his ability to play hard every game. I mean, he himself admitted that that's something he had to work on. You know, he comes from a tough background, a very similar story to Michael Orr's from Blue the Blind Side, where he was adopted by a family later on in life and given some opportunities to play football. He's obviously made the most of it, but at 6'6", 320, he's the type of guy that shore up a run game and also push the pocket back to get to the quarterback. So, you know, this is kind of a long-winded way of saying that at least they finally have some interesting young guys that maybe one of them could develop into that impact player. If I had to put money on which one I thought would have the best chance of doing that, it might just be Rashid Hagerman, who certainly has the measurables to be a Pro Bowl level talent.
Right, and I hopefully they hit some home runs. I mean, for their fans, because they, you know, they're sort of a, I'll say, like, as far as the NFL franchise go, I want to say they are a little tortured because they have these kind of, the first Broncos Super Bowl being, the second Broncos Super Bowl, that should have been the team that won, but again, they're 14-2 and weren't supposed to be there. So let's hope Dimitrios is getting them in the right direction and they can address some of these defensive issues they've had for what it seems to be their entire time as a franchise. The other thing is, do you agree with the deal they gave Roddy White today?
Yeah, I like it. 2018. Rule number one, as far as it doesn't matter what sport, rule number one if you're a GM is you're going to look a lot like the Philadelphia Phillies do right now, or, you know, there's a number of examples you can use in pretty much every sport as far as teams with aging superstars that no longer have the skill sets like they used to, but just take up a lot of cap and payroll space, and, you know, your team's stuck in mediocrity. But I think that Roddy White is a rare receiver that I think can age well. Sort of reminds me of a Reggie Wayne, where he's not necessarily 100% relying on his physical gifts. You know, instead he's just a real shrewd route runner, knows how to get open. And I think most importantly, he just has terrific chemistry with Matt Ryan. So I feel like even though he might not be worth every single penny of that contract, you know, at the very least, I see him being a chain-moving first down security blanket for Matt Ryan even 4 years from now, maybe even a guy that can stick inside later on in his career and run some nice routes from the slot. So I thought it was a fine deal, and, you know, good for Roddy White. He's been one of my favorite players in the league for a while now, and, you know, he's done a lot for that franchise, so I am happy for him from that standpoint. But based on the way you worded it, it sounds like you think it might have been a slight overpay, huh?
I just think the deal is too long, I think. I haven't looked at all the particulars of it. I don't even know if they're out yet. But it just seems like signing through 2018 seems kind of long for a guy that's 32. I mean, he's going to be 36 with that deal. But, like, I think you pointed out, like, he's not a guy that relies on, you know, a ton of speed or whatever. He's just kind of a pristine route runner. Got Reggie Wayne type, which I actually think is a really good comp for him. He might be a little bit more athletic than Reggie Wayne, but definitely a guy that relies on his precise passing routes, things like that, good hands. He still has a lot of lift in his legs. Like, he can still sort of get up. Because if I remember right, I think he had, like, kind of an amazing vertical, well above average to great vertical when he was at the combine in 2004, 2005, if I'm not mistaken. It's just like, but the NFL contracts can be misleading. You know, it's signed through 2018, but, you know, who knows if that contract's voidable. You know, maybe only his guarantee is rolling through the end of next year or whatever. So,
right.
We'll see about that.
Can we also say that from this point forward, any receiver over, like, 32 or 33 that gets a nice multi-year deal should probably send a thank you note at the very least to Reggie Wayne and Anquan Boldin of kind of, you know, poured a little fire on the notion that you should never pay receivers over a certain number in their 30s because they're just going to be on a steep downward rapid decline, where we've seen, you know, Boldin and Wayne both continue to be legitimate number one weapons for the teams they played on. So I feel like 30-plus-year-old wide receivers should at least give them some respect when they see them out on the field, because I don't think you would have seen a payday like this a few years ago. For a receiver, that teams didn't see that guys, like we said, aren't necessarily reliant just on their physical tools, you know, can still get open, still get the job done, still go up and get the ball and make plays for the team.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that because, man, before Reggie Wayne's ACL injury, he did not look like he was showing any signs of slowing down. And if I'm not mistaken, Reggie Wayne's been in the league since, what, 2003? Two years longer than Roddy White? Like, he's, you know, and all that guy does is produce. Like, he reminds me a lot. He's like a more Reggie Wayne. Just to get off on a quick jag about him, Reggie Wayne sort of reminds me of kind of a more talented Rod Smith. Not saying that Rod Smith wasn't talented, but boy, that guy, nobody really works harder in the NFL than Reggie Wayne because he's not a guy that's super athletic. He's not a, you know, he's not going to jump on the gym. He's not going to burn his speed. But, man, that guy does nothing but just work hard, run perfect routes, and get separation doing it the way that, you know, that you should. And he, you know, I don't know if we're ever really going to appreciate it because even in Miami, he was a guy that was the same. He was the exact same player that is he is now. Like, he doesn't look much different as far as a football player goes. And after all that time, it's kind of amazing. You know, hopefully he can bounce back from this ACL. I mean, even at his quote unquote advanced age, I mean, it'd be great to see. And I think you said it perfectly. Like, Ryan Clay should be giving a nice thank you note, and maybe even a little bit of his new contract to Bolden and to Reggie Wayne. So I don't know. I like it. I think it was I don't think it was a terrible deal. And like I said, I'm pretty sure there's verbiage in there where it's like, you know, it's not really anything guaranteed past 2015. So
yeah, I think I saw it was like $10 million guaranteed total. So I'm sure they could probably get out of it in a few years, but
yeah,
you know, we'll have to get more details on it for sure.
Okay. Like I said, I'm going to look at it, and if that's what you read, then it sounds like it's a better deal than when I first saw the headline. So next, we're gonna transition it to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. New quarterback, new coach. We talked about this last week, but do you like? I've never really heard your opinion on Mike Glennon. What do you think about Mike Glennon? Is he a guy that that thinks the franchise quarterback, a guy that can, you know, control, even if he's in a ball control offense? Do you think he's that guy, or do you think that him being second string, to Luce McNown is where he should be?
I think Mike Glennon could be a terrific clipboard holder. I don't see that guy as a starting NFL quarterback. He has a big rocket cannon arm. Probably one of the best arms in the NFL if we're just talking about natural, velocity and arm strength. But, you know, to me, he can't really move around in the pocket very well. Has some weird coordination problems when he runs out of the pocket or has to get away from pressure. And the thing that's always kind of depressed me about Glennon is, you know, a few years ago, he was one of the highest-rated quarterbacks coming out of high school. Went to NC State. He was good enough that the NC State coach gave Russell Wilson an ultimatum that if you play baseball, you're done on a football team. You know, we want you fully committed. And everybody thinks that, you know, that was just because of the whole baseball thing. Let's be honest, it was because they wanted to give the blue chip recruit, this was Tom O'Brien, the coach at the time, a chance to shine on the field and be the next quote unquote Phil Rivers, who was also a prototypical classic drop back passer at NC State. And then he had a chance, you know, really just a glorious chance to do big things there and become a potential, you know, first-round, top 15-type pick. And not only did the NC State program just kind of crumble out when he became the starter, but his coach that had so much faith and trust in him and, you know, bounding him around as the big blue-chip recruit that he got to come there, he ended up getting fired after Glennon's fifth year and senior year. So, to me, he was never really able to catapult a program. And, you know, it's not like he was trying to claim. This was NC State, who's always been at least an average program in the ACC, which is just near to mediocrity. So, to me, a guy that really can't take the team to the next level in the ACC, I just have trouble believing that he's going to be able to take an NFL team to the next level and make them a legitimate playoff or Super Bowl contender. And if you don't believe your quarterback can do that, then, like I said, you better just be handing them a clipboard and try to find a guy that can.
Another thing I was curious to get your opinion on, do you think it was smart of them to let Darrell Revis go?
Well, I think it's kind of a double, what I'm looking for. I guess what I'm trying to say is I can see it from both sides. A, I don't think it was. I can't think of a team mismanaging an asset worse than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers managed the ninth pick of the 2013 NFL draft. I mean, you spend a top 10, give a top 10 pick, you should at least get a starter or someone that contributes in some capacity for, at minimum, based on the new CBA, 5 years of their career, because you have 4 years plus the option. Obviously, we know the draft, especially the top 10, is where you're most likely to find impact talent that you can not only play on the field, but build around and build your program up and go from the bottom to the top. And they took that ninth overall pick, and all they got from it was 1 year of cornerback play with a huge cap hit for a team that was just putrid on the field. And then they end up cutting them and not being able to get anything for a guy who I still believe is far and away the best corner in the league. And what I guess what really bothered me the most about the trade was I'm fine with giving up a first-round pick for a guy that's talented as a raw leader. What I'm not fine with is making a trade for the best man-to-man corner who I personally ever saw. I mean, I think I firmly believe Revis is the best cornerback I've ever watched play. And then you stick him in a zone defense. Like, what? I mean, that just makes no sense at all. I mean, I just still can't fathom how you go and get the best man-to-man corner and then play zone with him. So I thought from day one they mismanaged that, misread, you know, what exactly they're doing with them. You would think that before they go out to trade for a guy like that, they'd have a plan of, you know, this is how we're going to use them, this is what we're going to do, you know, this is how he's going to propel our team to the next level. But it seemed like, you know, they're just kind of big-name hunting. That said, I can fully see why Lovie Smith, new regime, new coach, Lovie Smith is sort of like the cornerbacks, but Mike Shanahan is the running backs, where he can find guys that are undervalued, guys that aren't highly regarded, guys that might not even work on other teams. You know, Pina Tillman was a late-round pick. You know, before that, they had just several guys that were failed as soon as they left Chicago because of that Lovie Smith, Tampa 2, cover 2 scheme. You know, he's able to find a certain prototype that works for that. He gets guys really on the cheap, late-round draft picks, low-signing free agents, and it works. So I can fully understand why a new coach wouldn't want to pay a corner that he's going to keep in his own defense $16 million a year. You know, the cap flexibility is worth more than that. And plus, you know, Revis did, you know, speak up a little bit about how he wasn't a big fan of Greg Schiano. You know, I can understand why Lovie wants to get his own people in there and not have a guy that could be potential distraction. So I see why they cut him this year, but I still think that's about as poorly mismanaged asset as you could have in NFL. But, I mean, what do you think about getting rid of the Rob Revis after only 1 season?
Well, hold on 1 second, because we got a special guest, a.k.a. our co-host, Mike Pizzetti, on the line. Mike, what's happening, buddy?
2 weeks in a row, gentlemen. It's a trend.
Oh, my God. It is a trend. I'm very, very very pumped to have the old gang back together. This might be the first time since, subtracting last week because we had, like, 16 people on. But this might be the first time since, I think, April, all three of us have been on. And, Mike, I think you're with us for the rest of the show because we're only doing an hour today. So, right now we're actually...
I think the last time we were all together, there was snow on the ground, so...
Yes, which very
there's
well.
There's snow on the ground. Syracuse still had a chance to title it.
We're talking about the Real Revis right now, Mike. Brian made a lot of really good points. What did you think about Tampa just letting him go? Did you agree with it? Did you disagree? I mean, I personally hate where he ended up, but what did you think?
Kind of came in when Brian was going on about you know, how he brought him in, and he's the best man-to-man corner in the league, arguably, and you're playing zone with him. I mean, if that's the system you run, you don't want to pay a guy that much money to be in a system that's not conducive to his skill set. With that said, I agree with Brian that it is one of the most mismanaged, we'll call it asset, I've seen in recent time. He still has some good years on him. There's still some good tread on the tires. But they had to start over. You got to get your guys in there. You know, you're running your defense. And people forget when he was in Chicago, it wasn't Rex Grossman that was winning them games. It was that defense. And I don't think it's going to be this year. It might not be next year, but 2 to 3 years, that defense is going to be, you know, right up there at the top of the NFC and maybe even the league in terms of defensive efficiency. But with that said, can he maximize players? And, Brian, you said he can. You know, he gets a lot out of his players. Players that leave Chicago, you know, they don't really enjoy the same amount of success as they had under Lovie Smith. And I think that's the key on both sides of the ball. Can he maximize, can he basically make Mike Glennon into a more talented Rex Grossman? They have running backs. They have receivers. You know, they had some tight ends that developed late in the season. The pieces are in place, and I think he kind of went into a really good situation. And he's a hell of a coach. He got a raw deal in Chicago, and I really think he's going to make the best.
No, I agree with you, Mike, and Brian. I do disagree with the Darrell Revis thing, and I mean, I really can't make any more points about the Darrell Revis thing than what Brian made, but I do think that Werner might be a little more conducive to the cover two than Revis, and I think that the cost risk of what Werner does compared to what Revis does, I mean, you'd be essentially wasting Revis's ability, like much like they did last year, as opposed to maximizing Werner's and turning them almost kind of, they almost sort of, as far as what they can do in their respected skill sets within the defense that Lovie Smith's going to run, I don't know if they don't cancel each other out. And all I know is that Werner's a lot cheaper. So, I mean, it was probably the right move. But, I actually really like what they I think Lovie Smith kind of took something from Chicago more than a few of their players, which is basically what they did last year with McCown, with two really tall, really athletic receivers that can you know, outjump the cornerbacks, and maybe that's what McCown's good at, is just throwing it up to really tall receivers, and now they have two of them. So I'm curious if that is sort of being underlooked. So I don't know. I don't like the team for this year, but I think Brian and Mike, you both are spot on with Lovie Smith as far as you know, looking forward to the future for that team. I think they're going to be extremely underrated. Maybe next season. I mean, they might be that come out of nowhere team next year. But you know, it usually takes a coach, you know, unless you're Jim Harbaugh, you know, maybe like a year or two to get your guys that you, you know, guys that you want for your system. So I don't know. Like I said, don't like them this year. I think they're going to finish at the bottom, but I would look out for them going forward.
I think we could start calling them Chicago South, because, you know, I think we forget that a lot of the talent that is in Chicago was drafted under the Lovie Smith regime. And as you pointed out, though, I mean, this is set up. McCown was a Jim Trestman's guy. That was Lovie Smith's guy. Lovie Smith is the guy that first brought him back to Chicago. Obviously, Trestman's a quarterback whisperer, but if you want to get a quarterback comfortable with their surroundings, as you pointed out, you know, he had terrific success throwing to Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall, two tall receivers. Now he has Vincent Jackson, 6'5". They just drafted Mike Evans, 6'5". He had a lot of success with Martellus Bennett, 6'6", tight end that can go up and get it. So they grab in the second round of the draft. Austin Safarian Jenkins from the University of Washington, 6'5", tight end that can go up to get it. Matt Forte was the running back out there, a guy that can run between the tackles, but also chip in, you know, countless receptions a year and receiving yards. What's the running back situation like in Tampa? Doug Martin, same type of guy that can beat you in a variety of ways, catch a lot of passes. And then just for insurance, in case he gets hurt again, they took Charles Sims, the running back in the third round from West Virginia, who everybody and their brother compared him to, Matt Forte. So I feel like they're setting McCown up to be successful. It's a tough division. But personally, I'm not afraid to say it. I think Tampa Bay Bucs are going to be a playoff team this year.
Stop
nice.
It.
Nice.
Stop it. You can't be.
I like the boldness.
I think the only thing that could slow them down is their uniforms, because those things are hideous. But I like their squad. I really do.
Well, we also should, before we move on to the Carolina Panthers, we should mention Levante David being one of the emerging young defensive stars in the league. I mean, he took a huge leap last year, and he's quietly developing into, you know, quite possibly the cornerstone of that defense. So, you know what, Brian, maybe you're onto something. I know Mike This is crazy, but
crazy, but I'm telling you, David, Gerald McCoy is a real nice young player. They had a nice couple drafts. I just think that the talent's ripe, and I'm probably the biggest believer in the count other than his wife and Trustman out in Chicago and Lovie Smith. I think they're going to surprise some folks this year. I really do.
Well, they picked up Michael Johnson, too, from the Bengals, which wasn't a little underrated signing, I think.
No question about it. That the Lovie Smith Tampa 2 system, you got to get some pressure from the edge. You know, your Simeon Rice, your Julius Peppers, et cetera, and Michael Johnson certainly has that skill set to bring it.
Yeah. Mike, any last words before we move on to the Panthers?
I think Brian's drunk, but other than that, we can move on.
just a few cold ones after work. That's all. Come on. 24.
All right, moving on to the the salary cap Panthers. This is a team that really has no money. They might have a worse credit rating than I do. So, I don't know how they're. I don't know. They're definitely that team that has that all the fall on your face regression looks this year. Cam Newton's. Apparently they did something with his tendons and his ankles to make him more. To make him more explosive, but I don't know if those tendons are going to also make him fast enough to catch the ball as he's throwing, because they have nothing at wide receiver. I mean, it's kind of bleak out there. They let their best wide receiver go for reasons not shared with the public. And the defense, the defense could be good, but that secondary is quite suspect. So I don't know. That's another team that I don't like. Division going forward this year.
Which in that division, if you have a bad secondary, you're in a lot of trouble. And that's one thing that Tampa Bay has. That's one thing that Tampa Bay has that maybe the other teams in that division don't have is because it's a solid secondary. You're going up against Matt Ryan and Drew Brees, they're going to put points on the board. And obviously, Atlanta last year struggled a little bit on the offensive side of the ball, but look for that to rebound. They solidified the offensive line. But with Carolina, you can't throw the ball. And the only guy that can run the ball effectively is Cam Newton. I don't know how they're going to score. You can't hold everybody to 6 points. They're just not going to be able to do that. And last year, their defense was phenomenal. I think they overachieved. They preyed on a weak schedule. This year, the schedule's a lot tougher. They're not going to catch anybody by surprise. And who's their best wide receiver? Is it Kelvin Benjamin? And he's like a
Gerald
unknown.
Godfrey.
Jet, that's what I'm saying. Like, you need wide receivers, unless you're Tom Brady. You need wide receivers, and Cam Newton is not in that class. So a lot of question marks, and, this division always has different winners each and every year, and even if it didn't have that trend, I wouldn't even remotely think that Carolina could reach.
I agree. As much as I love the Buccaneers in the NFC South this year, I equally dislike the Carolina Panthers. As you pointed out, when Kelvin Benjamin might be your best weapon, and that guy's about 4 Pizza Hut lunch buffets away from becoming a tight end. So, that would certainly scare me on the outside. The running backs, D'Angelo Williams getting a year older, a guy that I've always been a big believer in, Jonathan Stewart's always hurt, so I don't really see how they're going to be, the ball control run offense that they want to be without exposing Cam Newton to unnecessary hits. And then on defense, the defense was terrific last year. Hardy's one of the best defensive ends in the league. Could be facing a possible suspension, though, based upon his troubled off season. And of course,
don't worry. He didn't
swear
about it, Brian. Yeah. He didn't smoke weed, Brian, so he might only miss 2 games.
Oh, okay.
Based upon the suspension that Ray Rice got, he actually might get paid. He might get actually a certificate. Don't get me started on that. But you're right. He was a phenomenal player last year, and unless he gets suspended, you look for him to have the same year. So.
Right, but you know what? I thought they lost a lot of, I think they lost a lot of good locker room leadership too. Obviously, Steve Smith's been, one of the team leaders there for a while. But a guy like Charles Godfrey, the safety that they had picked up, or Mitchell, another safety that was a nice big heavy hitter in the back end. And, losing guys like that helped cover up some of the mistakes for young corners. As Mike pointed out, in a division with Roddy White, Julio Jones, anybody on the New Orleans Saints and Vinny Jackson and Mike Evans, I mean, watch out. I think this team's headed for a top 5 or 10 draft pick next year. I really do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, they have regression written all over them. And, I mean, I don't know what else we can say other than, like, I don't expect this team to win more than 6 games. I'd be very surprised if they finished 500. And maybe this should be a season that they tank so they can kind of address some of their issues cheaper than trying to overpay, because they're going to have to pay Cam Newton, if not this offseason, I believe next offseason, because I think they have a player option coming up for him. But yeah, man, they just don't look like a team that's going to go 12-4 again. And like Mike pointed out, they definitely overachieved compared to a week's schedule because of a week's schedule.
If they do regress, does that put Ron Rivera back on the hot seat? You remember going into last year, even at the beginning part of the season, you know, the writing was on the wall for that guy that if they didn't perform, if they didn't make the playoffs, that he might be run out of town. Is that, you know, is that where we're at now where, hey, if you don't perform, you know, we need constant success? And I just, they're not built for that this year. They're certainly not. They might not even be built for that next year because of the lack of money and the lack of their ability to go out and sign people. You know, does that put him really back on the hot seat?
If it doesn't, it should. I definitely don't think he was the reason they went 12-4 last year. I don't think it had much to do with him, because he was a terrible coach until week 4 of last year. Come on, like I just don't like that guy. I'm not a believer in him. I've seen nothing from him before week 5 of last season is to show that he's an elite coach that deserved any kind of extension, or at least an above-average coach at that.
Yeah, that's a great point by Mike. I mean, he could be the rare guy that is 1 year removed from, you know, a deep, first-round playoff bye, a division championship, and then, you know, a year later looking for a job. I mean, I can't think of anything less surprising than a off-season storyline of Ron Rivera getting fired. So I think that's certainly a possibility.
All right, now we're going to move on to the New Orleans Saints, and I personally think that the New Orleans Saints are a team that could be in the hunt for a Super Bowl. In my opinion, they're one of the three best teams in the NFC. Where do you guys fall on them? I know we don't really have to talk about Drew Brees or really much about him other than their Jared Bird signing and a couple other things they did, but what do you guys think?
Well, Brian, I'll ask you. I remember talking to you on draft night. You loved their draft pick. I hated it. I really thought that's what they do. They score points. They go out and get those guys, but they have enough of those guys. I thought that they had a lot of other needs that they needed to address, and they didn't do that. That's part of why I'm not sure if they could be a Super Bowl team. Brian, you can definitely speak, because you absolutely loved their pick, the kid out of Oregon State.
Oh, I did, Mike. You hit the nail on the head. I was going to say, too, when we brought up the Saints, I was going to say that if I had to pick my favorite pick based upon fit with team, it would have been Brandon Cooks, the wide receiver from Oregon State, who I think is just going to be an absolute stalwart in the Sean Payton offense with Drew Brees, playing in the Superdome on AstroTurf. I mean, he's going to be what I think everybody thought Tavon Austin was going to be coming into the league, just, you know, a matchup nightmare that beats you in a variety of ways and has a bunch of big explosive plays. And though I do see your point that, you know, they certainly had a lot of other holes to fill, I thought they quietly had a real nice off season as far as getting Jairus Byrd, shoring up the back end. I mean, he's one of the more underrated safeties in the game. I think he's terrific. And they're able to do that without a lot of cap space. And for them to be able to bring in a big fish free agent like that, I thought was, you know, a job well done of balancing the books. And the reason, though, that I'm okay with taking the offensive pick first is I'm just a big believer in Rob Ryan. And I think Rob Ryan getting some healthy horses back as far as, you know, a guy like Victor Butler that missed the whole year last year but has a lot of untapped pass rush potential. And, I mean, if there's one thing we know about the Ryan brothers, it's going to be they're going to find a way to get to the quarterback. Cam Jordan was a breakout star for him last year on the defensive side of the ball. And I just feel like they finally have that defensive coordinator in place. It's going to limit the damage. It's going to hold opponents. It's going to get big turnovers, big plays on defense. And then you couple that with the you know, terrific offense and maybe the best offensive coach in the NFL. And I think they're going to be a pretty darn good team if everybody can stay healthy.
Are you sold on their ability to stop the run, though? That's one of the questions that I have. And yeah, you're in that division. You might not have to stop the run as much as in other divisions, but eventually you're going to have to play a San Francisco. Eventually you're going to have to play a Green Bay who's shown the ability to run the ball a little bit better now that they have Eddie Lacy. Can they stop the run? That's my question for them.
That's a terrific question, and that's a great point because that was the Achilles heel last year. And I do think so. They have a big nose tackle, John Jenkins, who was a second or third round pick out of Georgia. He's a 340-pound space-eating mammoth man. Keen Dunn, another a big D tackle they've taken recently. I think they finally have some of the space eaters where they play against those. They finally have the big bodies to match up against some of the trenches. And I also think having Jairus Bird added the fold, the guy that can cover so much ground, play center field, make the big plays, I think that's going to allow them to put, you know, an extra guy in the box more often, knowing that they have somebody that could cover and has the instincts to get to the right side of the field, you know, sort of leave him out there on an island by himself, bring up the extra safety to help against the run. And I think that ultimately, though, based upon the way they play offense, you know, if you get up 21-0 or you get up 7-14, 17-0 on a team, you know, typically you're not going to have to worry about them running the ball too much. So I think that is something that they can fix with Rob Ryan. But I would agree that right now is their most glaring weakness, something that they're going to have to prove out on the field this year in order to take that next step and get back to the Super Bowl.
Right, and I think that, you know, I mean, sort of to branch off of what Brian said, I do think that the teams might be a little afraid to throw on them with their safeties covering the back end of the field, and I think they have a little bit of an ability to get after the quarterback. I mean, Cameron Jordan's not exactly, you know, Robert Quinn or anybody, but he had double-digit sacks last year. I definitely think he's a guy that's going to, you know, at least cause a little bit of havoc on the line and make it a little tougher for teams to throw than it already would be with the safeties back there. So, I definitely think they're one of the three best teams in the NFC. I mean, I don't really know if they hold a candle to some of the I don't think they're as good as San Francisco or Seattle, but I definitely don't think that there's another team in the NFC that we could really kind of throw in that top three other than outside of Green Bay, which we'll talk about in the coming weeks. But yeah, it's not like it's a tough conference to be good in. It's just that I just think they, you know, might be a little underrated on defense. But I definitely think that they're the class of this division, which I don't think is a very good division, but they are the best. They are the best team in it. So basically, we're gonna. Do you guys have any other the closing thoughts on the Saints?
I think we wrap it up pretty good, and then. So, Micah, is that your pick for the NFC South to win the division still, despite some of their weaknesses?
Yeah, because I just don't think that, obviously, we can rule out Carolina, we can rule out Tampa Bay, despite your bold prediction. I mean, they will definitely be improved. The pieces are certainly there. And I think the big key for them, I didn't get a chance to mention it, is Deshaun Goldson. Like, how – he didn't play well at all last year. You know what I'm saying?
So, right, yeah,
he tried to hit people way too hard. Basically, it seemed like he didn't really play within himself. And that's the kind of player he is, but there really wasn't that presence to kind of say, all right, listen up, pal. You know, bring it back a little bit. Still play your game, but just do it within the confines of the rule. Because he's certainly an intimidating force. And I think Lovie Smith, not only is he a hell of a coach, but he's kind of like a father figure. If you remember the relationships that he had with the people in Chicago players, I think that can be something that he can develop there. To me, that's the key. He was their big free agent acquisition 2 years ago. Pairing him with Werner can give you one hell of a secondary. So, I mean, I do understand why you think that they'll be improved. I just don't see them winning the division. Atlanta, I mean, Roddy White's another year older. Not sold on their ability to run the ball. Yeah, they shored up the offensive line a little bit, but it's still not great. To me, it is New Orleans, and a byproduct of Seattle and San Francisco playing in the same division is that New Orleans is really, I wouldn't say guaranteed because nothing's guaranteed in this league. They're one injury away to Drew Brees from being 2-14, but really almost kind of locked into that two seed at minimum. because, as you know, obviously Seattle and San Francisco can't have both. So they're in a good position. Obviously, they'd like to get that one seed to play every game at home. But, yeah, to me, I think it's unanimous that they are the clear-cut favorite in that division. And like Bill said, it is a pretty weak division.
All right, so I'm going to give you guys the win totals of each team in there, and I want to know what you guys think. Over-under on the Saints is 9.5. You guys both have over?
Over.
Definitely over.
All right. Atlanta, 8 wins?
I'd go under.
You said 8 wins?
8 wins.
I'm going to go over. I think 9-7 is reasonable. Might not get him in the playoffs, but 9-7 is reasonable.
All right. Panthers also at 8 wins. I think they're under. I don't even think – I think they're way under.
Way under.
Under.
Way
under. All right. And the Tampa Bay Bucks, 7 wins.
Over.
I have them – I think that's about where they're going to be.
That is such a tricky – do you remember a couple of years ago when everybody thought Cincinnati was going to be terrible? And then you look at Vegas over-unders, and they had them at 8 wins. That's how you knew that they were going to make the playoffs. And that's kind of like what that is. That's what that line is. Like, I remember saying to a buddy of mine that, like, I will bet every dollar in my bank account that Cincinnati wouldn't make the playoffs. And guess what they did? They wouldn't make the playoffs. That's to me, that line of 7 wins, Vegas knows the thing. Generally, you want to do what Vegas does. So, Brian, between that line and your persuasion techniques, I'm going to actually say over on that one. That line just says everything I need to know. Seriously, think about it. Everything you need to know.
I mean, well, that's the same Vegas has Houston at 7.5 wins. So, yeah. I can't with them.
Isn't that more based off the talent that they have, though? Because you would have to argue that Houston has more talent top to bottom. At least I would. I would say that they do. With Arian Foster coming back, Andre Johnson. Yeah, quarterback is dicey, but to me, that's just talent right there. And that's another weak division in the AFC South. I don't know.
Right.
To me, that line is...
To me, that's the only argument you can make for Houston going 7.5 is that division being terrible. I don't know. You might be right, though, because I actually do recall this.
And I also think that was the same year, if I'm not mistaken, that the Cardinals a couple of years ago were 6.5 or something like that. And I think they went 9-7 or something like that. And it was just kind of like, what? No one saw it happening. I'm drawing a blank on what year that was, but I remember they were kind of – I mean, everybody had them penciled in for like 2 or 3 wins, and it, for whatever reason they went. I believe they went 9-7. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah,
but
I think it was the going into the 2012 season. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, because I think they lost in the first round of the playoffs. Man, I'm getting old. I can't remember this stuff as well as I used to. But yeah, it was something like that. But anyway – Brian, I wanted to give you a little bit of time, if you would like, to talk about Pat Bowlen as an owner and just kind of what he meant to the Broncos franchise. You being a lifelong Broncos fan, I was pretty sure you had opinions on what he's done. And just I read an article about him, and just kind of when he took over the franchise, they were like staring bankruptcy in the face, and they were just kind of a team. And then, I mean, he's guided them to a bunch of Super Bowls, you know, won a few. Just one of the more winning teams in the NFL since he took over. What are your thoughts?
Well, if I had one wish and I could wish it on something trivial, so, you know, this rules out, you know, ending world hunger and whatnot, my one wish would be that Pat Bowlen would have also won the Chicago Cubs, because I think that guy, you know, from a biased standpoint, was the best owner in sports. As you said, he took over the Broncos when, you know, the old joke with the Simpsons episode where Homer wants to buy the Cowboys and they give him the Broncos. And he says, oh, the Denver Broncos? Like, who wants to own that? And Pat Bowlen changed that whole, you know, that whole reputation that made a destination for players, coaches, executives, et cetera. It was such a great place to work. You never had to wonder if winning was the top priority. I've heard countless players, you know, the players always stay close to the organization. And players would just say, you know, never really treated any place better than they were at Denver. I just really thought the guy was terrific. Always spent ton of his money to help and give the team all the resources they need. And, you know, it really stabilized the franchise out there out west. Really just a sad, sad thing that, you know, right now when the team finally gets good again, he's tried so hard to get him good again for one last run before he gets up there in age. And, you know, it's just sad that with such a scary disease, such Alzheimer's, that, you know, even if they win in the next year or two, there's no, you know, no guarantee that he'd even really be able to enjoy or remember it. So I wish nothing but the best for him, and I really do believe he's one of the best owners in sports. He's Jerry Jones minus the being a media whore and making everything about him. But as far as loving your franchise, investing all the money you have and doing it and doing whatever you can to help grow it and plan, I mean, that's Pat Bowlen to a T.
All right, beautifully stated. Mike, do you have any thoughts?
I don't really know what else there is to say after that. That was pretty well said, my friend.
Yeah, I agree. All right, if you know what, I think we'll go ahead and end the episode. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about before we go?
Mike, how excited were you the other day that Bartolo Colon had a no-hitter going for sixth inning?
Oh, God. Honestly, like, I'm really not – I wasn't really interested in the Mets until, like, recently. They're on, like, a little bit of a run here, pre-All-Star break and now after. I don't want to get my hopes up, but it's hard not to. But I ultimately think that the best thing for the Mets is to trade whatever they can to get pieces. Obviously, Colon's not part of the long-term plan. You get Harvey back next year. As long as they don't trade any of the guys like Wheeler – and Darno and anybody like that, I'll be happy. But get what you can for the fat man, and then I'll be happy. But unfortunately, my interest has peaked, and I think that they're going to continue to play well and rope me into cheering for them. So hopefully that doesn't happen. And I'm basically rooting for my team to lose, I think, is what I just said.
Same here with the Cubs, but the good news for us and obviously Bill as a Mets fan too is the other day they sent out on ESPN.com, the top 5 rated farm systems in baseball right now. This doesn't include any young talent at the major league roster, so it doesn't include Anthony Rizzo for the Cubs or Matt Harvey or Zach Wheeler or anybody else for the Mets. It's just based on guys in the minors. And, of course, the Cubs are number one because that farm system is just ridiculously talented right now. But the Mets also cracked the top 5. So I think that, you know, when we're doing the podcast here in 2016, 2017, it might be pretty baseball-centric in the summer when the Mets are leading out of the East and the Cubs are leading out of the Central. So I've been saying this about the Cubs for the last 25 years, but hopefully I'm actually right.
And the only thing that – I know we have to go, but the only thing that makes me sad about that is that David Wright's not going to be in his prime to enjoy that, unfortunately. He's going to be on the tail end of his career, and he's going to have played for one of the poorer run franchises for most of his career. So that to me, is unfortunate.
That is
pretty Bernie Madoff.
Damn you, Bernie Madoff.
Yes.
And
you
Omar Minaya. Don't forget about that guy.
Yeah, sure, and Bobby Bonilla. And Steve Phillips. Maybe Steve Phillips, all four of them can, you know what, in this regard, I don't blame Bobby Bonilla, but you know what, Steve Phillips, Omar Minaya, and Bernie Madoff, you guys go kill each other. We have a couple minutes, actually. Mike, did you want to run through the South region, or do you want to wait for another time? Brian, if you have time, we can wait too. It's fine.
Yeah, let's wait till another time. I gotta get ready. I don't even remember who's in the South. I've been away for so long, guys. I apologize.
Oh, I got it. Bills, Broncos, and Steelers are your three teams so far. So,
Oh my God! That's gonna be a great Final Four. That's all I know.
So far, so good.
Gentlemen, it's been fun.
Hey, it's good hearing your voice, Mike. We missed you.
Sure.
Miss you too, guys. Without sounding sappy, I hope to talk to you soon.
Like,
yeah,
LeBron came back to Cleveland. It's akin to Mike coming back to the podcast. He's back.
Yeah, where the hell is your essay, Mike? I want an essay from you next week about how you're coming back to Underdog.
If I had time to write an essay, I would pen one, but I do not, unfortunately.
All right, guys. Take care.
Gentlemen, see ya.
Later.